We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on hot topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Black Tech Green Money isn't just about telling the stories of successful black entrepreneurs. It's also about giving actionable and wealth-building strategies that help you protect the future of our communities. That's why we're pleased to be supported by State Farm Insurance. State Farm also believes that we must invest in our communities to achieve economic growth by sponsoring programs like the AXO, which rewards high school students for their academic achievements. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, everyone. It's our favorite time of the year here at The Black Effect. We're heading to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival, and we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Wake that ass up.
In the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. We got a special guest joining us today.
Yes, indeed.
We got Royce the 5'9". Welcome back, brother.
What's up?
Who else we got with us, Royce?
It's my brother, Courtney Bell.
Mm-hmm. Peace and love.
Artist Courtney partner. Bell.
Yes, yeah, sir. My longtime friend and partner, Kino.
Kino.
We all talked to many times.
Kino and Royce looking very slim and vegan, man. What's up? Nice, healthy-looking lifestyle on y'all brothers, I can see.
Yeah, definitely a healthy lifestyle. Not quite vegan yet, though. Mm-hmm. Not quite vegan yet. I'm not all the way converted, but I'm getting there.
Almost there.
I'm getting
there. What you been up to, Royce? How's everything been?
I've been adjusting, man. Adjusting to the pandemic. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it's tough. Mm-hmm. It's a tough time. You know what I mean? So I've been trying to keep myself mentally stable. Mm-hmm. I'm learning about myself. I'm learning the biggest lesson I learned about myself is I don't need to be speaking all the time. Mm. I don't always need to be saying stuff. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's, I'm trying to get my filter together. I'm trying to learn how to protect my energy, especially on like Instagram, my timeline, what to look at, what should I just not look at.
Correct.
You know what I mean? So that's the biggest adjustment that I've been making. And then music, you know, I'm always making music, so... You know, so right now we got a project called The Heaven Experience where I took over ownership of a lot of my masters from dating back, you know, which is, I feel is super important now. You know, I feel like all artists should look at every song like a straight up asset. You know, we got all of these companies that for the most part don't even need to even know about music anymore. Mm-hmm. They're just looking at it like an investment, which it is, you know what I mean? So now it's best time to make sure that you got ownership and make sure that you can figure out new things to be able to do with the masters when you get them.
That's what a lot of people say. You know, people want their masters. They want their ownership.
But don't know what to do with them.
But don't know what to do when they get them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So what's the purpose of having them? And you don't know what to do with. You don't know how to monetize them.
Well, think about this. Remember when it used to just be physical, just physical copies. You know, you sell it sells in the store one time, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Now, when you upload it to the streaming platforms, it may not pay out in one big-ass lump like it may have before, but it exists now. It's just present. You know what I'm saying? So think about it. A lot of these companies, they're buying up all of these masters. They're signing up all these artists, even at the lowest level. But then, you know, it's all catalog, and it all adds up. You know what I mean? So I think it's key to just make sure that you have as many things on platforms as possible. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, other conversations can be opened up.
So that's why this is happening, right? Because I'm looking at you, like, you got 15 songs, 10 of them are best ofs, basically,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So is this why this trend of artists dropping projects with catalog, is that why this is becoming more popular, just because people are getting their masters back?
I'm not sure. I can't speak for anybody else. I know with me, as soon as I got them, the first thing I wanted to do, because we had to take them down, get them, and then now we need to put them back up so that they're there. You know what I'm saying? And then from there, you know, we can have, sky's the limit on what the conversation could be.
What was the process of getting it back? Was it, you know, some people have to wait a certain amount of time. Some people had to pay. Some people, it was just a conversation. So what was the process with you getting your masters back?
All of the above. All of the above.
Conversation,
but
time,
you, yeah, yeah. But you know, when you have, when you sign, you know, from our era when we did deals, it was standard for the labels to have control of the master for like 7 years, something like that. You know what I mean? So some of it was just waiting out to 7 years, going back and getting them. And then it's a process too. After that, so you know, you got to go through a whole process after that. And then some of it was, yo, let me buy that back. Mm-hmm. And then some of it, you know, it was all three. You know what I mean? So I'm constantly on that grind. Like, I want everything. I want everything that I've ever done, you know. And then moving forward, obviously, Keno and I are way more in the know now. So moving forward, there's no deal that we don't know how to do.
Do you talk to a lot of the Detroit artists? Because Detroit is a new wave of artists coming out. Do you get a chance to speak with the younger artists and say, hey, this is how you should be signing your deals? Or is it one of those things when you're young, you're like, ah, fuck that. We know what we're doing anyway.
Nah, I speak to them as much as I can. This is one of them.
Okay.
this dude is like enlightened beyond his years. Mm-hmm. He's non-problematic. But there's a few artists, a few young artists in my studio that I kind of mentor, not to the degree of him. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of companies, I call them like middleman guys. You know what I mean? Like, they come with a bag of money. They don't have much to offer. But since they have money up front and they're catching these guys at a time where they kind of need money, or they feel like that they need money, it's already in the contract. I actually read somebody's proposal, and it said, we will have ownership of the master in perpetuity, and then we'll split everything 60-40, 60 us, 40 you, and give you a $5,000 advance. And he was thinking about signing that.
For $5,000. God damn.
Because looking at the opportunity, though.
Yeah, because we don't.
$5,000?
Number one, we programmed to think short-sighted.
Correct.
Definitely. We have no kind of, like, idea of how to place value on that master so early on. We don't know what it's going to be worth until it comes out, and then it goes. And then it's like, damn, okay. Now I know a little bit more. Correct. Now I want to go get the master back. Now it's the same old song and dance publicly from a public platform. You bashing some company or something like that, which that shit don't look good either. You know what I mean?
But you get it.
I get it.
You understand. You signed that deal for $5,000, right? And this is what most people
not
probably
five,
think.
Though. It was 50. If it was something that somebody could see that they never seen before.
This is what they thinking, though. You make one hit. The label puts out that one hit. Now you're making, remember, artists don't make $5,000, $10,000 a show if they got a hit. They're making $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a show.
Very rare.
No, a lot of
very
more
rare,
artists
man.
Think, more artists you think maybe 20, 30, 40, 50.
I think it's probably less
we
than
just
1%.
Had this conversation on the way here. We were looking at the Ja and Irv interview. And we was talking about Irv's position, and I honestly see Irv's position on it. I see label's position. That's probably why we balance the way we do. If I'm a label or if I'm a person and I give you $5,000 and it goes nowhere, you don't owe me that $5,000 back.
Yeah.
Right? But when it goes somewhere, it's an investment. You invest in Apple, Apple don't get to come to you and say, well, we're going to take our stocks back because we're making too much. It's a deal. The problem is we don't always understand the complexity of the deals because we don't come from homes where that type of business is discussed.
But you can't be mad because
you can't be mad at it.
You have to have an attorney. So that means your attorney looks over that paperwork in most cases.
Yeah, but your attorney is their attorney.
That's right. I give you an attorney. It's just an attorney to label you all the time. You can have an attorney.
But you know how that conversation came up in the car?
Yeah.
I said, do you think it's possible for me, a black man, to cultivate a real meaningful relationship with an artist and own his masters?
And I said, yeah. He said, no.
For any period of time.
I think so.
Is there any point where that artist is going to get a little bit wiser, a little bit bigger, and then look at it in retrospect? Is it possible for him or her not to harbor some resentment?
You have to negotiate, though.
Yeah, I agree with you,
Royce.
You
have to renegotiate, though. Like, when that artist catches that hit, it has to be a point where it says, okay, I made my money back off the investment, because it's not just $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
You got to pay for travel. You got to pay for wardrobe.
That's the biggest part.
You're paying for traveling. So you're paying for
what would your
shows.
Renegotiation be?
It depends how big the record is. Like, perfect example, right? Sorry. Cardi B.
Mm-hmm.
When Cardi B was first signed, they put a lot into Cardi B. But then she took off. That should have been a renegotiate right then and there.
Mm.
You got one of the biggest female artists. Give her half the company. She's Cardi B.
Yeah, 100%. I agree.
That's my opinion. And no disrespect to Jeff and everybody. But
once I recoup my money, me and her should be equal partners 50-50.
But then what happens when you got 5 Cardi B's on your label?
Exactly. And that's what I was going to say, too, about the masters conversation. It's about the investment you put in them.
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't want none of your masters if I didn't make a large investment. But if I made a large investment, I can see why.
I got to get it back.
Or we could do... I think what we all should be doing, which is, as the older generation, we need to get through to the youth and let them see it's a different way to do it. Right?
Yeah.
Because this is probably the biggest disparity between the youth and the OGs that we've seen. Right? We've all come in. We've all had mentors that we've seen and respected and learned a lot from. This is the first time where the youth is looking at us like, There's a disconnect, and we think the disconnect is because as long as you can separate the youth from the experience, then it's easier to get them in these quick deals and take them for a ride.
Mm-hmm. And we're gonna be held to a different standard than the labels would be. I mean, it's been like that.
Yeah.
You hear the way niggas talk about Hov, Puff. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Don't nobody talk about Lior. Don't nobody talk about none of these labels.
Correct.
But listen, let Hov do something. Let Suge do something. Let any of us do something, then it's just like, oh man, you wrong. How could you do that? You know what I mean?
When you invest in somebody, like let's say him, you invest in him, you're paying for everything, right? Because he's getting a start. So you're paying for studio time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people don't think studio time is expensive, but you're paying for studio time. Mm-hmm. You're paying for them lights to be on. You're paying for the engineer. You're paying for the food, the per diem, the water, traveling, hotels, wardrobe if they don't have it. Now he has to make a record. If that record don't pop, you don't get none of that money back.
And you're doing it on some family shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to spoil each other. You know what I mean? And that creates a sense of entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So it's just, that's why I asked in the context of building, cultivating a relationship.
Because, mm-hmm.
you know, we do everything on some family shit. You know what I'm saying? So it's difficult to be able to do that kind of business and cultivate a relationship. That's why I feel like labels have existed with the evolution of technology the way they have so long. It's because they can just keep it strictly business.
Is that the other problem too, though, that black executives do the family thing? We're a family. We rock for life. We bad boy for life. Isn't that, shouldn't it just be more business?
That's what it always feels like. Even when, like, you look at Meek signing to Ross or Drake and you know, Nicki signing to Wayne. It's a family.
Mm-hmm.
It's a family when we win.
Yeah.
But then when you start throwing them bricks out, then it's F that person that you just called your mm-hmm. family. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I don't have nothing to say to that. Cause,
I mean, but we want family.
It is kind of what it is,
that's
man.
That's where we come from, though. Like, we, in our culture, we come from broken families. So the ability to make money with our family, it ain't just music. I mean, it could be the dope game, too. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It ain't too many differences from the way we approach the dope game and music. But at the end of the day, it still starts with leadership.
Bro, I went out there. I went out there when Puff was working on the Press Play album. Mm-hmm. I went out there to work for him, and this nigga had me in like a MIDI room, just writing verses over and over and over again while he was in the big luxurious A room with all of his celebrity friends and shit. And I was just like, man, this nigga ain't paid me. You know what I'm saying? Like, this nigga grimy, man. About 10 years later, after I was a little wiser, I looked at him in retrospect, man. I had to hit him on the DM. I didn't have his number. I had to hit him on the DM, man, and tell him how much I appreciate him, how much I took from that. Like, it was because of that process that I started to rewrite in my own creative process. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, I didn't even rewrite my own shit this much. Why don't I approach my shit with this same kind of intensity? I pulled that from it. And just the opportunity, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes, man, we take for granted the opportunity. And I looked at him and thought about how many great things he's contributed to the culture and how much all of the bad stuff, or the quote-unquote bad stuff, is always placed in front of us. Same with Baby. I wish I could call Baby and tell him how great I think he is. You know what I mean? Because it's like, every time you hear about these guys, it's all, they on drugs. They doing this nigga, kissing this nigga in the mouth. This nigga doing this. But it's like, bro, these niggas been existing since 1997.
Nah, legends. Nah, for
1997 real. Has not stopped. If that was anybody else from any other culture of people, them niggas would be, they would be
they'd
running
have statues.
Universal.
No, you're right. We have statues. We have to appreciate, even Dame. I seen Dame this weekend. I was on a panel with him. And in the middle of the panel, I had to say thank you. And he was like, for what? I was like, back then when I was doing mixtapes, even though it was like 99, I was like, you had an opportunity to do the Rockefeller mixtapes with Clue, with SNS, with Flex. But you said you wanted a young DJ at the time and you picked me. And I was like, thank you.
Because you were cheaper.
Just shut up.
That
shut up now. But, you know, he was shocked that I said thank you. But I was like, you know what? When you grow a little bit, you really understand how much of a... how grateful it was to have that opportunity. Because we don't have those opportunities. You know?
But I will say, though, 10 years ago, you wasn't no new nigga, Royce.
No. I was saying 10 years.
Yeah, have you in the B room, now you ain't no new
nigga. No. I was saying 10 years later from when that was.
Oh, okay.
You remember the Press Play album.
Yeah, but even with that, Royce, the 5'9 should have been treated with a little bit more respect, I think.
No. I was on a private jet with him. We went to Tampa.
Oh, okay.
It was just when we was up at Daddy's house. You remember how long ago Daddy's house was. Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? I was, he definitely, when he reached out to me, my man Slam, shout out to my man Slam, Wiz Packs and shit, but Slam reached out to me. And I was definitely just sitting around Detroit at that time when he reached out, for sure.
And I was going to ask, you know, with everything you've been through in this industry, the ups, the downs, the groups, solo projects, what makes you want to jump back into this on the executive side?
I don't want to jump in on the executive side like that. I don't. Right now, I'm more focused on mentorship, artist development, because I'm an artist at heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And
Royce hates the business side.
No. See,
because he on it. Envy, he's on the executive side. He just don't want to admit it.
I don't.
Executive side. I don't know if you know.
He don't want to admit it. He don't
want to say executive side. You're sitting in an interview with your artist,
with your
Royce.
He's
been calling me a
suit. You brought up here. That's kind of an executive.
He's been calling me a suit for 25 years, man. He don't want to admit it.
Listen, I love doing business. I don't want to send the wrong signal. I love doing business. I don't look forward to doing certain kinds of business with people who I have a relationship with. It's very difficult. I'm a Cancer. It's very difficult for me to separate business and personal. You know what I mean? Somebody I care about, it's going to be hard for me to, like, this nigga would be like, yeah, okay, so this is what we're going to do. We're going to give him something standard. I'm like, we can't do that. You know what I mean? So
that's
that's what we defer. You know what I'm saying? Because he's more of the business side. He's always been more focused on the business side because that's all he's ever been. He's never been on the creative side.
But you got to go through it again. You're going to have to go through talking to producers.
Yeah.
Talking through artists. Talking to DJs. You're going to have to go through the gamut again, that people that you think is family, until you got a new project and they're like, I don't know. Or you want a beat and it's like, for you, Royce, I do it for free. But for him, you know, you're going to have to go through that again.
Man, even when I'm doing albums, there's never been a time where I enjoy calling people for features. I hate that part.
It's the worst. That's why I stopped doing
albums. Especially being
like
in Detroit.
Just,
oh, yeah, you did mixtape. You did albums.
Yes, and that's why I stopped.
That's why Cali slapped all of y'all.
But Cali
don't care. That's why he lapped y'all.
He's great at it. He doesn't mind being persistent. I'm from a place where if I ask you once and you say yes, I shouldn't have to ask you again.
That's ego, though.
It is.
That's ego. Your ego get wounded You're one right. time. Now you just want to fall back. Like, no, if you want something, go get it.
Khaled is relentless.
He is relentless.
I tell people, I tell these kids, you have to have a DJ Khaled level of annoyance to make it in this business.
I don't even know if I would categorize that shit as annoying.
No, it's annoying.
It's like relentless.
They
it's like
relentless with this shit.
I admire it.
I love it too.
I wish I had that.
Me
you
too.
Know what I mean? But I can't do it because I get inside my own head real quick. You know what I'm saying? Like, this nigga know I'm calling him.
Like, you named this the Heaven Experience, but I'm wondering, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't Heaven one the name of your children?
No, Heaven is the name of my studio.
Your studio?
It's the name of my studio,
okay.
It's the name of my label.
Got you.
Yes, Heaven Studios. So,
okay.
It's like a hub, man. It's like I built like a hub. Why you never came to the studio, man?
I don't know. We're just in Detroit, too.
Huh?
We come back out there. I was just in Detroit dropping off packs. I'm going to come by there.
Okay, yeah. So it's like a hub. That's kind of like where me and him got kind of tight at. You know, I've been mm-hmm. new. I've always been a fan of him. But it's a hub for artists to come develop. And when I say develop, I don't mean just come and just make a bunch of music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, obviously the doors are open for them to come and do that as well. But just to come have conversation, man, about life shit, you know? Allow me to bestow some of my wisdom on your young process, because mm-hmm. every single mistake you can think of that you're gonna make, I made them.
Word.
Times 10. That's where I learned all my greatest lessons, you know what I mean? And I feel like it's a part of it. It's a part of success and evolution to, like, apply that back to the environment, apply that back to the generation coming behind you. Otherwise, you can't consider what you're doing success.
What part of it? What made you decide to work with Royce?
Same thing. I've always been a fan of him. I'm a lyricist. You know, I feel like coming from Detroit, that's what we bred on. I'm a fan of M. I'm a fan of Sean. And even outside of the culture, the Big L's, the Rakims, like, I studied that growing up. So, like, I studied his cadences when I first picked up my pen. And I respect him as a man first. Outside of business, we have a real relationship with each other. Like, we really kick it on an intimate level. So, you know, it was divine that it happened more than anything.
How you feel about Detroit's rap game now? I feel like Detroit is like one record away from really being the next city that takes off.
The next? No, are you crazy? Memphis and Detroit
sure.
been running
now,
shit for the
sure.
past
we
2 years.
Sure.
Next?
Memphis is, I would say this, Detroit street all day long, but Memphis is street and radio when it comes to it.
We getting there, though. You know what
I'm saying?
That's what I said. You're one record away from that gone, because there's so many Detroit artists that's popping.
We missing the mentorship, though. We are missing the executive side, because most mm-hmm. of the people who became executives, you know, Paul Rosenberg, he's here. I came here, or you went to L.A., right? So,
but who Memphis got on the executive side?
Gotti,
I guess. Gotti, right?
But Gotti signed all the artists. He signed, yeah. whether it's Black, whether it's Moneybagg Yo, whether it's... He's signing artists. Like, that's the one thing I don't see in Detroit.
You know,
there's
I think
so
Memphis,
many artists in Detroit.
You know, I think Memphis had that Detroit might just be getting the independence of it all. Because yeah. that goes back to 3-6.
Yeah.
You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So, like, mm-hmm. being your own label, having your own studios, pushing mm-hmm. the artists you want to
yeah,
push.
Yeah, we didn't have a lot of people coming back home. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? When Mario Winans left, you know, Mario kind of left. You know, when I left. Like, a lot of dudes from Memphis, 3-6, Carlos 6, July Brody, who did a lot of puff, like, they went home, so they was able to get what mm-hmm. we're talking about, right? They were able to get, I say it's an executive side, but, you know, Royce says mentor, and we was just saying, I use the word artist development when we talk about artists, because I think it's gone beyond telling somebody how to write a song. Like, artist development for me has been like, how do you get a hit record and come on here and not go home and die? Mm-hmm. How do you say to, how do you learn how to have mm-hmm. the right conversations? How do you get $1 million and not go buy rims or have everybody else, your lawyer, account, everybody take their money, but there's no understanding of how wealth is created? So for us, artist development is, and I think what Roy says, mentoring, it's about really just giving them the tools and the resources and the strategies, because a hit record can come and go.
Mm-hmm.
One hit record can set you up for life.
Yeah,
or you could have 10 albums and be broke.
Just teaching them the importance of solidarity. I mean, that's what we always missed in Detroit. Obviously, it's a little better now than it's been. But this is by far, the best place Detroit has been in.
Absolutely. Ever.
Culturally.
Ever.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we got so many artists popping right mm-hmm. now. But we are missing, with like what you said, we don't have that executive like Gotti coming and signing up everybody, which would help to kind of bring us all a little bit closer. You know, everybody's kind of like just all over
the place. Well, Coach K and P trying to sign every Detroit.
They're not the only ones, though. Gazi trying to sign. Everybody's looking at Detroit right now.
Last week I went through, I drove through Detroit. I think like 7-8 artists. I went to their each one of their hoods just to see how different it is. Mm-hmm. But just the fact that they get so much love in each one of their hoods and all their music is playing was like, damn, I just want to see it go. Like, go. You know what I mean? Like Atlanta was. Like,
I think we're there, though.
Yeah, I think we're
there. And that's what I was about to say. Like, just to answer your question, like, before the industry came to the city, because I'm a part of that generation, the Babyface Rays and all of them, we are our own celebrity in our neighborhoods and in the city. Absolutely. So outside of the culture, like, we'll get 1 million, 2 million views alone just in Detroit before it catches and sparks outside of our culture. So, like, I feel like that's the biggest thing with us. And, you know, chiming in on what y'all said, it is pivotal that we have that connection between the OGs and my generation, because now, being in the age of social media, we in a space to where it's like, with us having that disconnect, oh, I don't need you, because now I have money like you have money. I have the resources like you have it, but we don't have the wisdom and the understanding of the business side.
And they hustlers. They hustlers, too. Mm-hmm. So their concern is, we come in and get the money. Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily give a fuck about hit records. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I think that's why you don't see, you know, songs even structured like they're even trying to be on, like, radio.
Like, first day out.
Yeah, exactly.
What's going on? Exactly. There was no hook, no nothing. It's just
incredible.
Incredible record.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's like, I see where they're coming from. Like, that Vezo and Kodak record is ridiculous.
Oh, Vezo record is dope. They got a bunch of records, too.
I wonder if,
Maybe got a bunch of dope records.
Because I think about, like, Shady Aftermath, right? Like, was that the right machine, but at the time it just wasn't a plethora of artists like it is now? Because M did what he could, right? Like, he had D12, he had Obi.
M did an amazing job.
Put the light on Trick.
Yeah, even when he wasn't trying. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, just what he did opened up so many doors. Back then, Detroit was broken down like this. You had the street rapper side, which was the street niggas who rap. Mm-hmm. Kind of like what you see now. Mm-hmm. And then you had the hip-hop nigga side. That was us.
Yeah.
The backpackers, quote unquote, from the hip hop shop. Mm-hmm. So myself, Proof, everybody on our side got a deal. Every single person from that era on the hip hop side got a deal. It was just our time. You know what I'm saying? And I'ma take it even further. Like, the Street Lords, Cheddar Boys, Rock Bottom, all of these crews that were making the street records back then, mm-hmm. who were kinda in competition with us, they were making straight up club classic street classic records that still play today.
Facts.
That they were the kind of records that y'all are talking about that the youngins now are missing. The youngins now are kind of like a derivative of these guys. Mm-hmm. Street Lord Juan, Blade, God rest his soul. And it just wasn't, the game hadn't caught up to what they were doing yet. Mm-hmm. Now the game has caught up to that, mm-hmm. and the door is wide open for the Vezos, the Cider Babies, and they kicked that shit through, and they came stomping
Baby
through.
Face, yeah.
But I wish one of them would make. I wish one of them would make one of them real quick. Because if they do that, that's it. It's over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now I see you have a lot of people coming to Heaven Studio. Chris Webber was just there.
Mm-hmm.
I think J. Cole was there. Picture in your Cole. Yeah. So what's going on? Is it records being made? Like, what is it?
Yeah, it's records being made. C. Webb actually came the other day. He played some beats, but we got some other stuff that we're doing. Can I talk about that? In the marijuana business, we partnered up and we're doing some stuff.
Cannabis. Marijuana is a derogatory term.
Cannabis.
he just got some.
Cannabis sounds better, they say.
Well, you know what it is,
can
too?
I get canceled right
now? No. But somebody told me who's in the cannabis business that marijuana was a term that white people used to use for weed coming out of Mexico. And so it's actually a bad connotation.
They look down on it, so your attorney says use the term
cannabis.
Okay, cool. So
I say weed.
Weed is probably better than marijuana.
Yeah, it's weed.
Okay, I'm gonna say cannabis.
Okay.
I'm gonna go with my attorney on this one. So yeah, we partnering up on some stuff in the cannabis business. We're doing some NFT stuff together, and we're gonna make some music together. And then he has a bunch of dope ideas on stuff that we can do. And it was just a long time coming. We met like a while back, but we never really got a chance to connect like that. So we spent some time with each other and just seeing how like-minded we were. And I'm into that right now. you know, just being around like-minded people, mm-hmm. real niggas, you know what I'm saying? Building relationships and just figuring out ways that we can use our viability that we bring to the table, put it together and figure out what we can do and just be real creative with what that could be.
They got to legalize it too, though, first in Detroit. That's wild to me.
They got to legalize it. You mean federally?
In Detroit, yeah. Well, you know, it's
I thought it was legal in Michigan.
No, it's medicinal. Only in Detroit.
I thought it was recreational.
It's not recreational in Detroit. Oh. Okay.
No, but it's crazy because you can go 5 minutes out into the white area and mm-hmm. it's legal, mm-hmm. but this recreational, which makes no sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which makes no sense.
You know, we don't give Chris Webber and Jalen Rose and Jimmy King and Ray Jackson and Juwan Howard the credit they deserve, right? Because I'm not from Detroit, but I look at those brothers. They were so unapologetically black.
Yeah.
At a time when we didn't see that type of unapologetic blackness on TV embracing hip-hop the way that they did. But as a Detroit native, how did that impact you?
Man, it impacted me in a way that me and C-Webb sat and talked about that very thing you just said for 5 hours.
Wow.
Them niggas, they shifted the paradigm, man. They changed the way that players wanted to dress. Like, mm-hmm. yo, they first ones with the long baggy shorts, mm-hmm. the big baggy jerseys with the T-shirt under it, with the sleeves cut off. Mm-hmm. It was their idea to go with the Huaraches that did not match the uniform. Mm-hmm. It was their idea for everybody to cut their hair bald. Yo, they wow. And they was freshmen. All of them freshmen.
Up.
All of them freshmen starting running shit. You know what I'm saying? And it's just...
They paved the way for the AIs.
They paved the way. They paved,
the world.
Yeah. They paved it. And, we need more of that, man. We need more people, for lack of a better phrase, obviously, but to kind of, like, give the system a little bit of pushback. You know what I mean? Like... It's just necessary, man. It's necessary.
And I got to ask, Slaughterhouse, are y'all back on good terms? I don't know what month this was, what week it was. I happened to turn
it was early this year.
Instagram, and I seen y'all arguing on Instagram. You were the middleman. You were the one trying to calm things down, and they were going back and forth, and I just turned it off. I was like, I can't see these brothers arguing anymore. So y'all back good?
I mean, oh boy. I can never say we bad. You know what I mean? Like, listen, man, we spent 10 years together, man. Damn near every day building something special. You know what I mean? And it just ended in a very unfortunate way. But I can't just sum it up like that, man. I can't. I'm sorry, man. It's my doorbell at the studio. I'm sorry. Probably just DoorDash. Mm-hmm. So I can't just sum it up like, nah, we ain't good. You know what I mean? Nah, we haven't spoken, you know. Two of the guys, Crooked and Joel, made some decisions that, you know, we can't really come back from in terms of business. And that's really it.
Decision was they decided to do their own group or do their own thing together?
Nah, they I'm gonna give you the short version. But me and Joe are sitting around minding our own business, and we look up and they start rolling out a project. The project was called The Rise and Fall of Slaughterhouse. They put this project out, and the project is announcing to the world that the group is over. And this is while we had already went through a long negotiation with Shady to pull the group off the label so we can do things moving forward, so we can make another album, so we can relaunch merchandise, so we can relaunch everything Slaughterhouse. And for whatever reason...
So y'all were going to do another album. Even Joe was going to get in the studio and do another album at that time.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. So the whole album was basically about how Joe knocked on rap. Crooked came to the table with a deal idea. We didn't want to do it, so they over it. They're done. The group is done. And I just felt like that was a hell of a thing to blindside me with as a friend mm-hmm. and as a business partner, because, number one, if the group is going to be over, that's fine. Things end all the time. Just let me know that. Mm-hmm. Send me a text. Shoot me a text letting me know you're done. Or if you're going to go public and say that you're done with the group, that's cool. But don't just go public and just announce that the group is done. You know what I mean? Like, that's... I expected more out of Crooked. I didn't have as much of a problem with Joel because, you know, me and Joel always been cool. But me and Crook, I thought we were better than that. You know what I mean? So it was more of a personal thing. You know what I mean? But I can't bring myself to a point where I can get on a public platform and bash any of them, though. You know what I mean? I got too much love for them. Mm. And I think the amount of love I got for them is what made me so disappointed. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it go back to what I was saying earlier, just about, you know, airing out how I feel on public platforms. Bun told me, like, when Slaughterhouse first became a thing, he called me and said, anytime I ever aired out anything publicly, if it involved family, I always regretted it. And that always resonated with me. And I've done, since that conversation, I've went and done that probably 50 times. And I regretted it every time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so that's one of the things that I'm working on. So to answer your question, no. No more Slaughterhouse, but still nothing but love, always.
I respect everything that you said. And I feel like that should have been an easy conversation for Crooked and Joel, because Joe don't want to rap. So if he don't want to rap, there's no Slaughterhouse. So why shouldn't they be able to go do their own project?
Well, it's easy to paint Joe as that because of how many things he said publicly. But when we having conference calls and he's a part of every call and we having creative conversations about what we're going to do next, you know what I mean?
He was going to get back in there and do it.
Joe's thing is, I'm retired. I'm in the content space, but I'm really into ownership right now. I will rap in Slaughterhouse if we own it, but we got to own it. It can't be on Shady. And if we decide to take it to another label, I would be particular on how we would do that deal. Because we already built it. This is something we built already.
As y'all should.
And I agree that it shouldn't just sit on Shady. It shouldn't just sit on Shady. If Shady doesn't want to release it, and this is respectfully because I love them too, always. It shouldn't just sit on Shady. We built it. It's ours. So when we got it off of Shady, man, that was like fulfilling. It was bittersweet because it was like, damn, I had a vision for doing this with my good friend, you know what I mean? But it didn't work out for obvious reasons. So getting it off of there and still now having it back in our possession and having something that we built, the first tangible thing that we built in this business organically, you know, multi-million dollar brand that we built from the ground when everybody told us, nah, y'all been around the block. Y'all can't, oh man, y'all never be able to do festivals. Y'all don't have songs. Y'all don't have hooks. You know what I'm saying? Like, and we kind of like defied all of those odds. You know what I'm saying? So to get to that point, with Joe being way more knowledgeable, obviously myself being way more knowledgeable, and then just having it in our possession, and for them to just jump the gun like that because of a deal that he put on the table, which that's never been his role in the group. But I mean, anything that anybody put on the table, I would consider it. But I think that we should be allowed to ask questions, right?
All right.
Like if I put something on the table for us and you ask questions, or even if you say no, does that mean everything is over, or does that mean we go to another label? We hadn't talked to any other labels yet. We hadn't even talked to a label in that situation. We talked to a guy who was talking to a label. We never had nothing on paper. There never was a proposal in black and white for us to look at. It was just a conversation. He didn't like how the conversation went. So he decided, fuck them. We're going to go do this.
Do you feel, playing devil's advocate, right? Do you feel like, you know.
White devil's advocate.
We know Joe is doing well with his content, creating everything that he's doing. You're obviously doing well. Could it be a situation where maybe Joel and Crooked weren't doing as well? Because the group was so much financial for them. I mean, y'all were going on tours. I don't think y'all ever really got the money that y'all deserved yet. Do you feel like maybe that was their way of saying, look, I got to feed my family at the end of the day?
Possibly. And I mean, listen, that makes it even worse. Because it's like, bro, if that's what it was, who are you supposed to have been talking to? You know what I'm saying? Like, who wouldn't understand? Who would understand that more than your brother, me?
Right.
The guy who been up and down, just like anybody else in this business. You know what I'm saying? Like, I understand the ups and downs. So if this is a downtime, and this is like something, because there's been plenty of things that I've done, because one of my rules in the group was, I'm not doing any three-man shows.
All members got to be there.
It's been plenty of times Joe couldn't make it, where they were like, yo, listen, we need you to come do this because we need the money. And I did it. You know what I mean? So, what is
and
that?
And it was just a bad deal. Like, Royce is going to be political. It was a bad deal. They positioned a bad deal. And they used a lot of stuff that was happening within the group. It was just a bad deal. It wasn't the right person.
There were times when Joe was ready to rap and we couldn't get Crook to rap. they don't talk about that shit. You know what I'm saying?
Like, well, I couldn't Crook rap. Crook always ready to rap.
Crook didn't want no. See what I'm saying? See, people got the wrong impression about people, and that's mm-hmm. why Joe is easy to paint as a certain thing.
He's an easy target.
Yeah, and Crook and Joel look like they look like the blue collar guys.
Correct.
You know, the guys who, you know, willing to roll their sleeves up. Fuck all that. Mm-hmm. Crook. He had his ways about him the whole time. He always had some issue with Joe that he wouldn't address. It was always in the air. I can't quite put my finger on what that was, but this nigga done made Joe diss records. He done did all types of shit. You know what I'm saying? People just didn't hear him. You know what I mean? But he did it. He did it. And there was a time where he was like, nah, I ain't rapping. You know what I mean? Nobody fucking went out and put out an album about him not rapping and saying that the group is over with. It's just, it's messy. And then on the business side, it's like, yo, you're not fucking up our shit. You fucking up your shit too. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We all taking the same L together. And then, you know, like during the whole process, you painted me in a certain light. You had to paint me in a certain light in order to be able to do that. And I'm just trying to figure out what did I do to deserve that?
Yeah, and I mean, there's no reconciling because I heard people getting invited to the Frank stand on those calls, right?
Oh, I never did.
Didn't somebody say SMD on one of those calls?
Joel.
Oh, no, Joe. No, Joe.
Joe
it was a Frank stand.
Joe said that project of SMD. He said that project.
Yeah, that project could suck my dick. Yeah. Well, maybe it was the project. So, yeah, maybe that's not
that just, yeah, when I started seeing it online, I was like, you know what, enough.
That was just some Joe shit to say, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't like. Joel know how Joe talk, you know what I mean? So that wasn't really nothing. That was one of them things where you can take it super, super offensive and personal if you choose to. But Joel said a lot of weird stuff too. You know what I mean? Like, everybody played their part. I'm holding myself accountable for the part that I played too. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's a little.
What part
late.
Did you play? You think?
I mean, you're making it hard for me because I don't do much wrong, Charlie, man. I did that thing that I was talking about. I went on Joe's show and I was frustrated, and my reaction to what they did caused Crook to react to how I reacted. You know what I mean? And then what he said made me block him. It made me block him on social media and made me block his number because I love him too much, and I don't want nothing else to get said that's gonna turn me up, that's gonna put me up there.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, and I don't feel like there's anything that should go on in the rap space that should even bring you to that. You know what I mean? But we all guarding something. You know what I mean? Like, we all guarding, whether it's our egos. We come from environments where the measuring stick, the cool, is some souped up tough guy shit. You know what I mean? Like, everybody's like, watch how you talk to me, respect me, but everybody ain't being so respectful.
I get
you know, so.
Talk to me about the Lupe Fiasco thing, because I still don't understand where that went left.
Lupe like, Fiasco?
Y'all were doing a podcast remember. Together. The next thing you know is diss records flying. Like,
I really don't know.
Like, I've tried to follow it, but I really don't know how that turns into that. And at first, I thought it was friendly. Just on some, like, I'm super lyrical.
Totally lost.
Lupe is super lyrical. Let's, you know, do some records together.
It was friendly. But the same thing happened. There was a conversation on live stream on a platform, public platform for everybody to see. And Lupe, he made an assumption. He assumed, because Murder Mook and Loaded Lux, one of those guys, posed the question, who would win in a battle between me and Lou. Now, URL had already reached out to us and asked us would we battle each other on the platform.
Mm-hmm.
We said no. We talked about it. We agreed that that's not even something that we would be interested in. Mm-hmm. I never even looked at Lou as like that he could be an op of mine. You know what I mean? Like, I don't feel like that he's that kind of rapper. I think he's an amazing rapper.
Correct.
But I don't think he's that kind of rapper. I don't think of guys like him when I think of, if I thought, damn, if I was to battle somebody, who would it be? You know, I would think about people like Sahai. Mm-hmm. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, that makes sense.
People who are more aggressive and, you know, like attacking MCs kind of style. You know, Lou is more of like a cerebral, top tier, amazing lyricist. So so we said no. So when Loaded Lux and Mook posed that question, they called Lou and start just hyping him up, saying, you know, like, I think Lux was like, I think you'll win, you know. So whatever they talked about, Lou assumed that I was the person who initiated that conversation. So he thought that I spoke to him and we agreed that we wouldn't battle. And then I turned around and went and sparked up a conversation trying to bait him back into going on that stage to battle me. And he didn't like that. But the way he did it was just, it just wasn't cool.
Why he just ain't call you and ask you?
That's what the fuck I'm saying. So he came, so me and Young Guru, we on live stream. And then he's in the comments saying, bring him in. So I bring him in. I was me, him, Young Guru. I think Mook was on there too. And we bring him on. This nigga ain't got no shirt on. Like he walking around with no
shirt.
What
I got to do with it?
He's ready to fight.
I got everything to do with it, man.
Smoke. You want
to
smoke?
Because it's like my nigga, I came up with a dad who used to cuss me out not wearing no shirt all the time.
You know, it's a trigger of yours.
It's a trigger.
Yeah. So it's a sign of aggression.
So he like, I seen it immediately. He was turned up already as soon as he brought him on. Yeah, nigga, you gonna keep bringing this shit up and making a fool out of yourself. Get yourself embarrassed, nigga. And it was just like, I said, Lou.
Put your shirt back on.
Put your shirt back on. I said, and calm down. Now, we were doing a podcast together, and there were two other times that he kind of turned up on me. And he get passionate, and he just start kind of raising his voice. And, you know, Lou, building a relationship with him was kind of like a case study, man. For me, it's like the challenge to me is building a relationship with somebody, coexisting with somebody who you know you may have conflicting ideologies with. It's somebody who you may not necessarily have a relationship with if it weren't for the music space, which I think is, I'm intrigued by that.
Right.
Because I think he's such an incredible lyricist, and I think he's so different from me, but I think that through music we can find the neutral things that we agree on, and we can also learn to agree to disagree on the things we don't agree on without having to try to change how each other feels. And you know, like, to me, that's the ultimate way of building solidarity, because I think black people in general, we feel like the shit, we got to be a monolith. We don't. You know what I mean? Like, we all pretty much have the same goal.
Right.
Everybody's agenda starts to change a little bit, and everybody's pathway to getting to that end goal is different. But everybody thinks that their pathway is so superior to somebody else's.
Right.
So, and I think music is the only thing that can kind of neutralize that. So, and I like Lou. I still do. I like him as a person. I think he's real cool. I disagree with a lot of shit that he has to say. But so, he started yelling. He yelled a couple times at me on the podcast, and I just told him, it's not a problem. It's okay for you to, like, cross my boundary if you don't know my boundary. As long as when I let you know about it, you know, you can make that correction, moving on, and we fine. So it never was like an argument or nothing, but it was just like, yo, the yelling is the only thing that I can't really do. I don't do the yelling. I don't yell at nobody in my life, and nobody yells at me. You know what I mean? So that's just not something I'm willing to, you know, deal with. Some people are different. Some people are cool with that. Some people don't like when you lie. Some people don't like, yo, don't yell at me. You know what I'm saying? So this was the third time he did that. So when he came onto the thing, he yelling, and I'm telling him, Lou, calm down. And I already knew. I was like, yo, I think you think that I initiated this conversation. I ain't had nothing to do with this conversation. This is something that they came up with on their own. And I was like, calm down before you say some stupid shit. And he was, you know, when somebody already turned up, it's hard for them to calm down. So he kept yelling and yelling and yelling and yelling. And then I called him a bitch. And that was the thing that I did, that I got to hold myself accountable for.
You regret it?
Do I regret it? I don't know if I don't know if regret is the right word, but I'm not happy about saying that, because I don't think he's a bitch. You know what I mean? I don't think we should speak to each other that way.
Of course.
You know, but I do understand why I said, I understand why I said it, because it was just a reaction. It was a point that I got pushed to. And I feel like I gave a lot of warning points. I gave a lot of lead into it. And that's me knowing myself. if it gets to a point where I start getting upset, I'm gonna just react, and then I'm gonna go outside of my body. I'm gonna vibrate lower. I'm gonna start doing shit that's not really reflective of the way I want to evolve. And I don't feel good about it. Mm-hmm. I don't feel good about it, but I think I would regret it if he had apologized. Then I definitely would apologize, and then it would go down as a regret. But as of right now, you know, like the way that everything kind of got summed up, it is what it is, but I don't feel good about it.
So you haven't spoke since?
No.
Damn, and it turned into records. Like, y'all actually going at each other.
With a record, when I did mine, it was still in the friendly competition category. But after I did mine, that's when he unfollowed me. That's when he stopped the podcast. So to me, that's an official fallout.
Yeah.
So to me, that's no longer a battle. That's just a fallout. Mm-hmm. And now I regret the song. That's why I never responded to what he did.
Who you think won the battle? Just musically.
Anybody can. He can have it. He can have it. I don't, you know, it wasn't, I'm not, first of all, I don't think anybody cares about, it never was about who can rap better, who can win in a battle. It never really was about that, man. We sparked up conversation to have friendly conversation with a whole lot of different guys that speak to a whole lot of different audiences, mm-hmm. all together, mm-hmm. so people can follow one clear, precise narrative. You know what I mean? Like, there was a point in my career where it was important to me to be the best lyricist. Mm-hmm. I've grown from that, you know what I mean? So, I mean, I think, especially when you're talking about somebody like Lou, who's so much different from how I am, it's just gonna come down to preference,
right. mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? I don't think what he did is him at his best, in my opinion, not from me as a fan, mm-hmm. it's him at his best. It was just sound like a bunch of angry shit, a bunch of angry, scathing shit mm-hmm. that he said because he was mad.
I heard that about both of y'all, though. I heard that about both the projects that, both of the songs that y'all dropped.
Nah, it wasn't no venom in mine.
No, I'm not talking about the people just was like, oh, this isn't either one of their best, but I think it's because of the expectation. Because y'all are super lyricists, right? So you thinking Lupe and Royce going at each other, you about to hear some shit you ain't never heard before.
Nah, it wasn't that kind of atmosphere. You know, it wasn't planned for us to, you know, just go at each other like that. Everything just kind of happened spur of the moment. I blame the pandemic, too.
And then where did Mickey Fax come in?
Mickey Fax just kind of inserted himself.
Yeah,
he just kind of inserted himself into it, and I think he just looked at it as an opportunity to get in the mix, because he was one of the people that was involved in the combo that we were having, you know. But
so he was boosting it up, like who would win between you and
Lupe? He was one of the people kind of talking about it, but after the me and Lou thing happened, I think he looked at it as an opportunity to jump in there. Because he jumped on the live stream with me, and he didn't like the fact that he was trying to get me to call him a top tier lyricist, and I was just telling him I don't view him as that, but I do think he's dope. And he thought, since we were in front of an audience, that I was trying to play him. And then Joe came in, and Joe was kind of talking at him, you know what I'm saying? So he turned around and he did his diss record and shit, and I think it was him and Lou were kind of like in cahoots with it, because Lou was kind of like, all right, now you do that. That means I don't have to respond back and say nothing. You know what I mean? I don't have to keep going back and forth. Cause I think part of Lou felt like that I had planned this shit the whole time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So he thought that I was going to keep going. So that was one of the reasons why I made sure that I didn't respond. Cause I didn't want it to even seem like that I was had even planned that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like I don't want to put Lou in the position to where he's viewed a certain way. You know what I mean? Like, that ain't what I'm here to do. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I kind of had to let it go. The Mickey Fax thing, people were like, yo, you got to respond. And that's exactly why I didn't respond. Don't fucking tell me I got to respond. I got to do shit. You know what I'm saying? That's another thing, man. The fans or the followers or whatever you want to call them, they think we work for them. You know, yeah. They think we like, you know, step and fetch it and shit. Like, we just rap when they say we should, because they want to be entertained. And yo, that's cool too. We can rap competitively to entertain if that's what we agree to do, as long as we keep it respectful. But if it turns into a fallout and it turns into real personal feelings, I'm not interested in that, man. I had enough of that in my career.
Hip-hop is exhausting.
Yeah, it is.
And the male ego is so fragile. Like, all of this stuff sounds like it's just one phone conversation could, like, dead so much of this.
Yeah. I agree.
Where would we learn that communication from?
Therapy.
name a rapper in therapy.
Yeah, it ain't too many. It's more now. You know what's so funny? It's more the younger generation that's embracing it than the older people who probably really need to process some of that unhealed trauma.
You know what? Lupe, he's so smart. He's so smart. He's too smart for his own good. You know what I'm saying? That nigga don't think he need therapy. He needs therapy. He definitely needs therapy. But I mean, you know, dog, I got mad love for Lou.
Well, let's get back to it. The Heaven Experience. It's out this week.
You want to play What a Time?
Do I what?
You want to play What a Time?
Yeah.
Let's play What a Time. Right,
well, we appreciate you brothers for joining us.
Thank you
featuring
for having
Courtney
me, man.
Bell.
It good to see y'all, brothers.
The earth.
It's the Breakfast Club. Good morning.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com, that's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.